wanted to talk a little bit about that which we ought to do in a positive sense as we leave Tisha B'Av. We need to be margish, and this is really just an introduction, we need to sense and feel the necessity of the Gula. I spoke to Rodham Godel this past week, and he told me, he spoke to Rodham Godel of a generation before, and he asked him, he says, did you study the halachas as a young man in Europe, 70, 80 years back? How much time did you spend studying the halachas in the 9 days? He said, in reality, very little. He says, what did you do in the 9 days? In the 9 days, we cried. Nowadays, we spend a lot of time learning the halachas, and very little time crying. So I explored with this Adam Godel what the reasons for this are. I think the reasons that we came to are very simple. In European society, Lo'aleinu, the persecution was so blatant on a daily basis that you didn't have to wonder why you wanted to get out of it. In all the social cataclysm of the early 20th century in Europe, the rise of communism, socialism, which gave forth in the same roots to the Zionist movement too. It was founded in Russia because of the intolerable situation of the impression of the oppression of the Tsars. People felt we have to do something, has to change. That sense that life was intolerable and it had to change was pervasive. Lamela, when I came to the 9 days, he cried. The situation was intolerable. Baruch Hashem, the Rebbeinu Shalom has blessed us. We live intolerant times. We go about our life, minor incidents here and there, but by and large, undisturbed. We're able to be mechanach of children. We have kehillahs, community, we have kashrus, Baruch Hashem. Jewish life thrives. We're blessed. We are blessed by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam with great comfort. And from that standpoint, the 9 days comes. And we can't exactly imagine how much better is life going to be. And we live in one of the richest countries in the history of the world. And Baruch Hashem, probably the richest Jewish community that ever existed in history. Political freedom. Full-fledged members of society. What more do we want? We're not even sure. So we need to have a little bit of perspective, as I alluded to yesterday in the drosha, that we do live in times where there are clouds as well. And we have to be sensitive to those clouds. In a very simple sense, Ahmadinejad Yimach Shemoy, if he can get up and declare before the nations of the world that his intention is to wipe Medinat Yisrael off the map. 5 to 6 million Jews. Halachayat. And the world is saying why? The world is not up in arms. He's not persona non grata throughout the world. History has taught us not to ignore such people. Until the Nazis, Yimach Shemo, dismissed such things as the rantings of wild people. But nothing more than rantings. So history has taught us not to be so dismissive. We learned a very, very difficult lesson. In the last days, we had this grotesque barter of the bodies of two dead soldiers held for 2 years for the most barbaric people on the face of the earth. The very notion of keeping the body of a dead person and not returning it for kufura would outrage the entire world. But when it comes to Jews, it's acceptable. The normal order of business. And we're not even sure, as a country, Israel, how to react. Perhaps we don't always react in the wisest way to such situations either. But this grotesque situation reminds us
that all is not exactly well on our scene. We have a lot to aspire to, and a lot to be mispallel to the Rabbeinu Shalom to want to change in this world. Chazal tell us that the Churban came about because of Sinas Chinam. And not wishing to dwell upon the negatives, but Baruch Hashem, we're quite accomplished in that area. I would say over the course of the last century, the intolerance internally in the Jewish community has grown to new heights, way beyond what was known even in European society. If someone's different than us in his religious expression, it's not enough to say we disagree with them, but the character assassination that follows is almost immediate. It's part and parcel of the world we live in. It's something that is very, very difficult to live with, but unfortunately it's part of our community. But as I said, I didn't come to dwell upon the negatives. The question is how to react, and the way we have to react is with Avos Yisrael and Avos Chesed. It's the only reaction that we could have. There's a pasuk we recited this morning, we recite it every single day of the year. And in its simple meaning, it's obvious. Mechisa v'chazdecho amzul ga'olto ne'halto v'ozecho ne'vei kachecho. That the Rabbeinu Shalom brought us, directed us with chesed to the gula, amzul ga'olto. Ne'halto v'ozecho ne'vei kachecho. And with strength he led us to Eretz Yisrael, to this holy place. The Psikta tells us a very different meaning of this pasuk. That Klal Yisrael knew from Messiah, from Yosef, that the Rabbeinu Shalom had promised the Gula. And Yosef had told them, Poko Yifkor Elokim Eschem. And the years dragged on, and nothing seemed to move. The persecution was more intense than ever, and nothing was on the horizon. There was no Gula. So what did Klal Yisrael do? Klal Yisrael is Mechisa v'chazdecha. The Rabbeinu Shalom observed the chesed that we did. We began to do chesed for each other. Under those extreme and difficult circumstances, we began to extend ourselves for others. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took note of that chesed, and that's what set the Gula in motion. And Chazal tell us, we read it in the 3 weeks, in Haftarah Tziyam B'mishpat Yipodah B'Shaveh B'Tztoka, in an Agolius. The Goliath will not be redeemed on the Mitzchus of Tztoka. And the Mitzchus of Tztoka that we do, the Tzedek, the Mishpat, that we bring forth, the Rabbeinu Shalom will redeem us. So we have to extend ourselves for other Jews. I have a chaver. His mother, Aleha Shalom, was a Rebbetzin. She was born in the Litta. The Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, used to come stay in her father's house when he came to that particular town where they lived. One day the Chofetz Chaim showed up at the house, he knocked on the door, he opened the door, and the Chofetz Chaim told the father, I'm not staying here anymore. He was rather astounded. Mach Pishi, Mach Atosi, he said to the Chofetz Chaim, what did I do that he shouldn't want to stay here? So the Chofetz Chaim said, you opened the door, and I looked down, and I saw you remade the floor. You made a new floor in the house. Now there's a brand new floor, he says. When the Aniyim show up with their filthy boots, you're going to let them into the house to muddy up this floor? And a house that won't allow Aniyim into the house, he says, I will not stay. So he said, her father had a promise to Chofetz Chaim that he had no intention of barring the Aniyim from the house. He would allow the Aniyim to cross his threshold and muddy up the house. After that assurance, the Chofetz Chaim agreed that he would henceforth he would continue to stay in the home. The Avos Chesed, the Avos Yisrael of the Chofetz Chaim, he could not associate with a place which would not deal with Aniyah Yisrael. If it wasn't steeped in Avos Yisrael, it was a place that he would not enter, could not live for a moment in such a place. The Gemara tells us at the end of the sixth parak in Bava Metzia, a very, very well-known Gemara, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana hired porters to drag around barrels of wine for him. But unfortunately, he hired shlemazels. And while they did the job, they smashed the barrels of wine, and his wine went down the drain too. Now, the halacha is that he has every right to sue them for the damages. So So we took a mashkin for the damages. He took their coats away from them. So they went to Beis Din, and Beis Din insisted that Rabbi Rav Chana return the coats. So he said, "Din ha'achi, is this the halacha? The halacha is, I know the halacha." So they told him, "Asisa ayosha v'atoyv lefnim b'shoras adin, you should give the coats back." Then the Aniyim told the Beis Din that we don't have anything to eat. We're going to go home today. We worked the whole day. Never wish lemazels, but there won't be any food on the table because we didn't get paid. So the Beis Din told him to pay up. So he said, "Din ha'achi, this is all that it did." So they answered him, "V'orchos tzadikim tishma." So he paid. So the Vilna Gaon, in his Perush on Mishlei, he asked a very obvious question. Both of these are halachos of the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. So the Gemara should have brought one source for both of them. Either Vasisa Vayosha Vatov, or Vaochar Tzadikim Tishma. Why did the Gemara on the first halacha bring Vasisa Vayosha Vatov? And on the second pasuk, the Gemara cites the pasuk in Mishlei, Vaochar Tzadikim Tishma. It's in Perek Beis in Mishlei, I think, pasuk Chof. So the Vilna Gaon says the following. There are different aspects in the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. There is an aspect that all of us can relate to. There's a poor person, Nebuch, he's a shlamazel, he messed up, I have the right to sue him. You're going to sue this guy? This guy Nebuch doesn't have a nickel to his name. Every Jew with a sense of compassion can understand, okay, just take your coat and get out of here, we'll call it even. It was a bad day for me, but I'll write it off. That's understandable. Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. But nevertheless, that's something all of us can grasp. And that's what they told him about. This is for all Jews. We can appeal to their sense of yeshua, to their sense of compassion. There's a time for the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, and they can relate to this. The second step, to pay someone for such a job, that the rational mind is a very difficult time with. Only a tzaddik can relate to the fact of the need to a pauper under those circumstances and accept the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin to pay him. And therefore, when it came to the second step, they told him, "V'orchos tzadikim tishma. You, Rabbi Baruch Hanu, are such an esteemed and exalted spiritual figure that you can relate to paying someone when he's unworthy because of the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin. But this is no longer the normal Lifnei Meshuras Hadin which relates to the average person." So we have the notion that Vilna Gaon is telling us of extending ourselves for something the Lifnei Meshuras Hadin, and extending ourselves something which is totally off the charts, which is really no rhyme or reason to really be able to relate to. The Meshech Chochma tells us the same message in Parshas Emor. He asked a very interesting question. The Meshech Chochma says that if they asked me in Shemayim, if the Rebbe Hashem called me upstairs, and he asked me that I should draw up the Jewish calendar, I have one major change I'm going to make. He says, "Yom HaNoraim at the wrong time of the year." And I'll tell you exactly why, he said. If you look at the world in history as an agricultural society, so he said, from the springtime, from Nisan till Cheshvan, the whole world is engaged in the same thing. If you look at the Jewish world, the non-Jewish world, everyone's busy on the farm, everyone's worried, but they're busy with the crops. The whole world looks the same. Where does the difference between the world arise? What happens from Chodesh Cheshvan to Chodesh Nisan? So this is a slow time in the farming business. You have to sit back and wait most of the time. There's little to do. The Jewish world, we turn to Ruchnius. There are pursuits of learning Torah, Chesed. We're steeped in Ruchnius. The non-Jewish world, there's leisure time pursuits, which don't particularly look so pleasant as we know. Now, if we have to stand up against the Umas Olam and Mishpat, it's one of the things that takes place. Rosh Chodesh Nisan would be an ideal time. We're coming off 5-6 months where we look like roses. Compared to what they've done in these times, we win hands down. So he says, so why in the world did the Rebbeinu Shel Olam make the Mishpat and Tishrei when everybody looks the same? He says, the reason is, in Parshas Emor we have Le'oni V'Lager Tazoi V'Yisom. That is a very strange statement. We have Tztoko, Matnas Kehuna, Matnas Aniyim. Now normally, we have Noson Titen, we give Tztoko. Why do we have only when I hear Tazov? Tazov is a very unusual term. And he says the reason is that an old stock, whether we give Matnas Kehuna, Matnas Aniyim, we give Maiseroni, we select the person that we want to give it to. I have a relative who's a Kayin, there's a Yidah Talmud Chacham that's a Kayin that needs it. The Oni, he sits and learns Yayim Valayla. It's the type of person I want to give my Maiser to such a person to support. So I select the person according to the standards that I have, who's worthy and who's not. When it comes to leket shikcha and peyah, I have no role whatsoever. It's left in the field. I disappear. 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, whoever shows up takes it. I have no control whatsoever. If he's a yirat tzaddik, if he's an average person, if he's a person that's far below average, a person that I like, a person that I dislike, makes no difference. He's zeicha to it. The Rebbeinu Shalom pays midah keneged midah. So at the end of the harvest, after we did leket shikcha peyah, we come before the Rebbeinu Shalom and Rosh Hashanah. Say, Rebbeinu Shalom, I can't necessarily say that I'm worthy. Am I necessarily worthy? Who knows? But one thing, when it came, when the pauper came, I didn't look if he was worthy or not. I gave my money away to whomever came, irrespective of his merits. So Rebbeinu Shalom, when you judge us irrespective of our merits too. It's a special schus to stand before the Rebbeinu Shalom. We're not so medactic, we're not so particular with how we extended help to others. So we can ask the Rebbeinu Shalom to extend help to us as well. I have a chaver. His family comes from Germany. Before the war, his grandfather was walking one day in the forest. He went for a hike in the forest. Now, the forest is not exactly a place. They don't have stores in the forest of Germany. So he had no reason to take his wallet along. So he left his wallet home. And he's hiking through the forest. And as he's hiking through the forest, he meets a yid. Deep in the forest, he meets a yid. And the yid is impoverished and comes over and tells him he needs financial help, that he should extend help to him. He looks in his pockets and he does not have a penny with him. He has nothing to give him. So my grandfather turned around and he started to weep bitterly. He says, for the first time in my life, a yid came to me to want my help, to desire my help. And I was unable to help him. He was shattered by the experience. He turned around in the forest and he wept bitter tears that he was unable to assist his fellow Yid. Gemara relates the famous story of Nochem Ish Gamzu. That Nochem Ish Gamzu was traveling with on his donkey and he meets up with a pauper and the pauper tells him, Rebbe, I need something to eat. So Nochem Ish Gamzu is a compassionate Jew. He jumps down off his donkey. He starts unpacking to dig out where his food is. And while he's at it, the guy kills over and dies. And the Gemara tells us that Nochem Ish Gamzu accepted awesome Yisurim upon himself as penance for this particular event. That's very hard to understand. What was the sin of Nochem Ish Gamzu? If he told him he's too busy, I have no time for you, when he went on, and then the guy killed over and died. So he's a chayit, I understand. But Nochem Ish Gamzu jumped off his donkey and as quickly as possible went to unpack the food that was stowed in the saddlebags to give him something to eat. And Nebuch, the guy was in such weakened conditions before he could get it out. He killed over and died. So why was Nochem Ish Gamzu, what did he do tshuva for? The Belzer Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I don't remember which Belzer Rebbe it was, but the Belzer Rebbe he had a very unusual practice. On Yom Kippur, he walked up and down the aisles of the shul and bells of his Beis Medrash. And he looked very carefully at the face of each of them as Palalim. And if he saw someone that looked ill, he reached into his pocket and he whipped out a piece of challah and he gave it to him. And he told him, eat right now, while the Rebbe was standing there. And this is how he would proceed up and down the aisles throughout Yom Kippur of the Beis HaKnesses to see if there was anyone that was ill that needed to eat. And the Hasidim asked the Rebbe, where did you get such a strange practice? And Yom Kippur, your pockets are loaded with challah and you march up and down the Beis Medrash? He says, I took it from the Gemara of Nochem Ish Gamzu, he said. What was the chet of Nochem Ish Gamzu? Nochem Ish Gamzu didn't anticipate that his help may be needed. And he stowed his food in that he had to dig it out. Chazal expect us to be ready to deal with needs as they arise and to anticipate them. I know in Yom Kippur there are people in the Beis HaKnesses that can take ill. It may not suffice to tell them to go out to eat or to send someone to run home down the block to bring a piece of food for him. So before I come to the Beis HaKnesses on Yom Kippur, I stuff challah, load up the packets of my bekesher. So when I walk down Yom Kippur in the afternoon, I march up and down the aisles of the shul. If Chalila is a yid that's ill, he doesn't have to wait 1 second. Help is immediately here. That's what I learned from Nochem Ish Gamzu. We have to anticipate the chasodim. I'm friends with Ramesh Chodosh, Shlita Roshiva Yeshiva Aral Chonon. He related a story to me from a Chassidish Yid. It was either his Yid or his father. I don't remember which of the two it was that had gone, actually gone to learn in Slobodka. He came from Warsaw, from a Chassidish family. And for whatever reason, he set off to the Litva to learn a Litvish yeshiva. Not a very common thing to do in those years. He learned in Litva for about a year and a half. And then he came back, Yom Haroim time, Sukkot time, he came home to Warsaw. Now, the section of Warsaw in which he lived was similar to the buildings in Williamsburg. They had huge apartment buildings. And consequently, they didn't have private sukkahs there. They had huge communal sukkahs outside the buildings. And the first night of sukkahs, he went to eat with his friends. And after the meal, he was 19, 20 years old, so they were schmoozing in the sukkah after the meal. He suddenly looks outside, and he sees in the shadows outside the sukkah there's an old man standing. He seems reluctant to walk in. So he turns back to his friends, and he tells them, Rabbi Yisai, I don't know why, but we're disturbing this man. We got to get out of here. So they told him, listen, what in the world are you talking about? You just make things up out of whole cloth? I mean, what in the world? We're not doing anything. The guy can come in if he wants. What do you want from us? So they went back to schmoozing. Another 15, 20 minutes goes by. And again, he looks up and he looks out, and again, this Yid is in the shadows outside the sukkah. So this time, he becomes insistent. He says, Rabbi Yisai, we're disturbing this Yid. We've got to get out of here. So his friends gave in to him, but not so easily. He said, okay, we're leaving. Well, we're going to see if you know what you're talking about. We're not just going home. So they went out of the sukkah, they marched around to the side, and they're still looking through the cracks in the sukkah to see what's going to happen. No sooner had they left the sukkah than this old man marched in, and he opened up a little package. And in this little package, they had a little piece of challah and a little piece of herring. So they realized he was embarrassed that they should see that that's all he had to eat on the first night of Sukkot, Nebuch, is a little piece of challah and a little piece of herring. So this Yid that I learned in Slobodka said, I have to tell you, he said, I was not any kinder than my friends. I was no wiser than my friends. Then why did I realize it? And even after I told it to them, they still couldn't see it until I told it to them a second time. He says, I understood this for one reason. Because when I learned in Slobodka, the altar used to hit us over the head regularly. Don't wait for people to come to ask you for chasodim. Live with your eyes open. Observe carefully the world around you. And react to people's unarticulated needs. How often do we show up, we come to shul, we see a person come to yeshiva, he's a little down in the dumps. If we just look at him, he's not himself. A kind word to go over to see what's on his mind. People don't necessarily spill out what's in their hearts. But if someone is kind enough to be able to pick up on the fact that they have need, they oftentimes will tell you exactly what's on their mind. They will appreciate. How much did we appreciate the last time that someone noticed when we were a little out of sorts and came over to us and extended themselves? I was 14 years old. I was in the hospital. Had an infection. Hospital is a morbid place. I don't like hospitals. You know, the rabbis, I have to visit them. I still don't like them. They're morbid places. Now, when you're 14 years old and your friends are running around outside, you certainly don't like to be in the hospital. Here I was about a week in the hospital. It's not a very pleasant scene. I'm down in the dumps. I had a friend who's about 5 years older than me. He was about 19, 20 years old at the time. And unexpectedly, he drove down a few miles away from to the hospital where I was. He walked in. I remember at Ayayim, it's 40 years back. He walked in. He brought me two Danishes. He stayed with me 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is. In one moment, I was lifted from the pits to elation. I didn't ask him for anything. I didn't expect it. Just his own realization that someone needed something and his willingness to extend himself to do it. If we live with our eyes open, there's so much chesed that we can do that people don't ask us for. But if we watch carefully and observe, we can pick up on it and help so many people. Chayni Amagel. I spoke about Chayni Shabbos. I won't go back to Chayni again. Chayni I spoke about. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, in his Avos Yisrael, 1 year in the middle of the Tfilas in Rosh Hashanah, he stopped and he screams out the following. He says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, You know, there's a melacha to write. It says, "Berosh Hashanah Yikaseimu, Yom Tzom Kippur Yikaseimu." There's a melacha involved in tziva and yontif. So, Rabbeinu Shalom, if you're going to write Klal Yisrael and scribe us for Shnat Chayim V'Shalom, it's Bikuach Nefesh. So I give a psak, you're allowed to write. But if not, Harini Oyser Aleha Lichnoi, it's also to write on Yontif. You can only do such a thing, Rav Levi Yitzchak, was suffused with Avos Yisrael. The Avos Yisrael was so pervasive within him that there was nothing that he wouldn't do for Klal Yisrael. And as I mentioned about Choni Amagel yesterday, Shimon Ben Shodach said that a Yid that has such Avos Yisrael, the Rabbeinu Shalom accepts even such types of activities on his part, which would be totally untoward and unacceptable for anyone else. But if it stems from a person with such deep Avos Yisrael, then even in Shemayim they accept it. We need our proposal. It's not a new proposal, Rabbi Yisai. It's a proposal that's very old for the Balei Musar. And that is that each one of us should at least undertake, besides financial chasadim, to do one personal chesed a day. To extend ourselves once a day for someone else. In some sense, pick up the phone or make a call to help someone, speak to someone that needs cheering up, needs help with a shidduch, needs help with pranosa, whatever it is, pick up the phone, be matriach, put myself out once a day for another yid. And last but not the yid that's my type. Doesn't have to be my type. The leket shitchon pei, I don't know what type it's to. He's not my type. He's even a guy that perhaps I don't even like them altogether. And I really consider him really unworthy. Put ourselves out for someone. Rav Elia Lapian, Zeichat Tzadik Levrocha, was the mashkiach in Kfar Chassidim. I mentioned this once before. Uri Shechter was there. Uri learned in Kfar Chassidim, and he remembered this, in fact, in the years that he learned in yeshiva. Those that have loved us, most of us who have learned in yeshiva, realize one fact, that there's one job that you don't give to a mechubadik, a person in yeshiva, and that's to go around and wake up the guys for minyan in the morning. This is not exactly a way to gain the garnish covered. Not exactly what you want a Rosh Yeshiva or an esteemed mashkiach doing. Rav Elia Lapian, Zeichat Tzadik Levrocha, went around each morning and he woke up the bochum for the minyan. So they asked him, Rebbe, what do you want? This is beneath your dignity to do such a thing. So he said, it's very simple, he said. I realize that I have very little opportunity to do chesed. I'm the mashkiach in yeshiva. I'm 60 years older than the bochum. I'm the esteemed mashkiach. Is someone going to come ask me when you go to the store to bring me back a soda? Are they going to ask me for change for a dollar? To go to the post office for them? What are they going to ask me? No one is going to come near me to ask me for a chesed. I'm an untouchable. So it's intolerable. I could spend my entire life and I won't have the opportunity to do chesed for people. This way I am assured, I start off today, this is a chesed that nobody wants to do. The bochum do have to get up, whether they like it or not. They still got to get up in the morning. So that's it. So this chesed, I accepted it upon myself. By the time I got to shachris, I know that it was Isaac and Chassadim today. The day will not pass by without the Milas Chesed. I'm going to share with you, and this I'll end, two incidents. One was related last week in New York, where Matisyahu Solomon Shlita Rosh, the Mashgiach of Beis Medrash Gevurah Lakewood. As you know, Meir Yeshiva escaped the jaws of death. They left Litha in January 1941. Miraculously, and you know, Murray Vachomi Shlita was among them. And miraculously, the communists didn't send them to Siberia, they actually gave them exit visas. The exit visas weren't worth the paper they were written on, but they actually worked anyhow. It's another story in its own right. They came to Japan, they came to Shanghai, they survived the war. Some of the Chavarim who were apart from Yeshiva at the time when they left were unfortunately not able to join them and to leave. And after the war, one of them met Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, and he described him. He says, unfortunately, he was captured by the Nazis. He was in the concentration camps. He says, Gehenna in this world is an understatement for what I went through. He marched miles out into the forest every day to chop down trees. And then we had, after the backbreaking an entire day's work, match miles back to the camp. But if you slow down one step, the God shot you dead. We had Gehenna in this world. Mitzvah, the possibility of doing a mitzvah under these circumstances was didn't exist. So there's one mitzvah that you were able to do, and that one mitzvah sustained us. We had one fellow in our barracks who used to keep a careful watch on the moon. And each month, as the moon approached, the full moon, we joined hands in our barracks in bed, we joined hands with each other, and we recited the Kiddush Levona. And the Kiddush Levona, we have one line, V'la Levona Oma, Shetishchadesh, Shetiferes, Lamus, Eivoten, Shemasin Lishchadesh, Kemo Yisrael, Lefor Liyotzom, Hashem Kavod Malchusoy. The moon disappears from sight. It gets smaller and smaller, and one day it disappears, it's gone. But yet it comes back again. And in the Kiddush Levona we say that this symbolizes Shemasidim Lishchadesh Kemo Yisrael. We also, at times, we diminish this tremendous darkness. We almost don't exist. But you, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, promised us that you bring us back from these depths. He says, as I held hands with my chaverim in the barracks in the concentration camp, he says, this is what gave me the spirit to be able to survive those difficult years and to emerge. And Baruch Hashem, I did. And to show you the reality of this, my brother-in-law, Rav Shimon Brook, Isaac, in Russia with Russian Jews for the last many years. He ran a yeshiva in Berdichev for 2 years. And 1 year during Ben Azmanim, he decided his Talmidim came from the Ukraine, from very towns around Berdichev, that he was going to travel in Ben Azmanim to visit the families of the Bochram and Yeshiva. He came to a house, and there was an elderly woman, a grandmother there. And she observed him. She started to converse with him in Yiddish. And he's fluent in Yiddish. He answered her in Yiddish. And she told her son, go next door. There's a root house where they store the root vegetables that they shouldn't turn rotten, the potatoes, the turnips. Take up the floor. Take all the root vegetables off and lift up the floor. Take up the floor. And under the floor, you're going to find something. He went, he took all the root vegetables off, he took up the floor as his mother and grandmother told him. Underneath, there was a carpet. There was a package wrapped in carpeting. He took out the carpet, he brought it to his grandmother's house, they opened it up, and inside was a Sefer Torah. The brother-in-law opened it, and it was on Parshas Achrayimis. So he asked the woman, his grandmother, what is this? She said, the fascists came to our town, the Nazis, Yimach Shimon. On Yom Kippur, they pulled into town, and they burned down the shul. And my father realized what was about to happen. He grabbed the Sefer Torah from the Aron Kodesh. He ran to a house, he wrapped it in a carpet, and he hid it under the floor of the root cellar, that the Nazis shouldn't be able to find it and destroy it. And he told me, one day a Yid like myself is going to come back to this house. Give this Sefer Torah to him. And it was in Parshas Achrayimis, the Parsha of Yom Kippur. And she said to my brother-in-law, you're a Yid like my father. You have a beard like him. You speak Yiddish. You are from a Yid. My father meant 60 years after she hid the Sefer Torah to give the Sefer Torah to him. And he very cleverly managed to spirit it out of Ukraine and bring it back to Yerushalayim, or to the Aron Kodesh, and Saner Yom HaChevet, and Ezra's Torah Beis HaKnesses. There were dark hours. The Sefer Torah hid underground for 60 years. But Shem HaSidin L'Shadish G'mayso. If we grab a hold of the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael and Avos Chesed, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam tells us, Kol Merachmim Al Abrius, if we have compassion on our brethren, in Merachmim Olam Min HaShemayim, we will open the gates for the Geulah. As Chazal tell us in the Psikton, what opened the gates for the Geula from Mitzrayim was the Chesed, that we extended ourselves for each other. That was the final step that was necessary. As Rabbi said, let us go forth from Tisha B'Av with a positive agenda. If we haven't repaired the Sinas Chinam, as the Chofetz Chaim, as the Chatzadik Lebrocha wrote in the Avdom of the Chofetz Chaim, let's begin an agenda of Avas Chesed and Avas Yisrael to show the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that we take seriously the lessons of Tisha B'Av. And maybe come together soon, Be'ezus Hashem, to sing Shiras and Sishbochas at the gates of the Migdash in Yerushalayim, and Erev Yameinu.
How did it get it?